The Trump administration's approach is unlike what most Americans in or out of government have ever seen, and it's especially causing indecision among those in government who disagree with that approach. Should they stay and work under an administration they're troubled by to try to effect change, or should they steer clear and move into the private sector? We'll hear from a couple of experienced political hands on that topic, beginning with Bill Antholis. He is CEO and director of the Miller Center at the University of Virginia and the former managing director of the Brookings Institution. Bill, when you think about this, can you see it from both sides, that sometimes staying makes more sense than going and vice versa?
I've tried to think about this in two or three ways. One, having served in government, first as a political appointee and then being hired by the State Department in a more longstanding position where you take your party allegiance off and you're just serving the government. You have to think about the people that work in the executive branch of our government as wearing one of those two hats. So when a new president comes in, he or she brings in their team, and the team is both in the White House and across the federal agencies. Those people tend to be believers and true believers. This administration is different in that regard, in that they are bringing some traditional Republicans in who tend to have one thing or another that casts them as conservatives. But then they're also bringing in people who self-consciously think of themselves as disruptors. Then there are the traditional civil servants. Those people already exist in the government. Many of those people are finding their way out of the White. Many of those people serve in the White House on the National Security Council staff. Some of those people are asking to be returned back to their home agencies. When they get back to their agencies, how senior a level position do they want? Do they want to wait this administration out? Do they want to fight for longstanding views of those agencies against the administration's push and try to explain either to the administration or to members of Congress why traditional ways of doing things are done in those traditional ways? Or, and we're starting to see this through leaks, do they want to be subversive, frankly, in defense of those institutional entities?
If you're someone who feels like the foundation could be in danger over the next 4 years, what makes the most sense based on the way our system is set up now? Do you think someone could have more of an impact from the outside, or does it make more sense to sort of be on the inside and try to do that? I mean, just from a logical sense.
I would say the answer is really a function of both how senior you are, how much you know, where you've served, if you're in the Foreign Service, if you've made your way through the very difficult, very professionalized Foreign Service process and made your way to ambassador. So say you've put in 15 to 20 years of service, you've gotten to that level. If you really have come to master a part of the world, Eastern Europe and Russia, you may choose, as Toria Nuland did, who was Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, career Foreign Service officer, had served both Dick Cheney, very conservative politician, Strobe Talbot, a very thought of more center-left side of the political. She'd served both those people admirably. They're united in a view that Russia is a threat. You see this administration come in and say, Russia is not a threat. Russia is, I don't see Russia as any more threat than Western Europe and Germany on trade issues. She sees that, she's out. For her, publicly coming out and being now in a position to challenge the administration on the outside with members of Congress, with the public, with the media, if that's what she chooses to do, puts her in a very powerful position, not necessarily to influence Trump to do things one way or another, but to limit the damage from her perspective that Trump could do. There are other people who can serve at a senior level who might, on a different issue, say relations with China, where the contrast is not quite so stark, be on the inside to say, hey, I see where they're going. I think they might be able to deliver it in a more diplomatically polished way. I'm going to stay in on the inside and see if I can help manage this to some degree.
Bill, have you talked to folks, and are we seeing more people who would have been likely to serve in a Republican administration, a more traditional one, that are saying they don't want to serve this kind of administration?
Oh, there's a lot of that going on. I've talked to people who have met with Mr. Trump himself, were offered positions. They weren't as interested in those positions. They laid out the kinds of positions they might be interested in and the philosophy they would bring, and they were never called back. We're seeing a number of different people go into the administration, not so privately, telling friends and colleagues, look, I'm going into this knowing that the movements around President Trump are like Game of Thrones. A series of lords competing for fiefdoms within the administration that overlap one another, and they're jockeying for position. And President Trump is willing to let them go to battle with one another to see who rises from that. And people are joining the administration with that uncertainty, saying, look, I'm going to just see how this plays out. So it is a complicated game that's going on up there.
Bill Antholis is CEO and director of the Miller Center at the University of Virginia and formerly served in government as director of international economic affairs of the National Security Council and the National Economic Council. For another perspective, we turn to Dan Schnur. He's a political scientist at USC and UC Berkeley who has worked as a strategist on a number of presidential campaigns. Dan, what is the thought process for longtime government employees who've served in the State Department or Department of Justice, for example, when it comes to whether they should stay or go?
The smartest leaders, the smartest elected leaders at all levels of government understand that in addition to the people who come and go with each individual administration, there is a permanent, or at least a semi-permanent, number of individuals who devote their entire lives and their careers to public service. And these smartest elected leaders understand the potential value that those lifelong career public servants can provide, and also the potential obstacles that they can impose. If you watch local, state, or federal government, you frequently see those career public servants, if not absolutely opposing, certainly slowing down the implementation of an elected leader's goals if that elected leader doesn't make sufficient effort to reach out to those public servants. And it appears we're seeing a great deal of that here.
Well, at least some gave Mitt Romney some credit for, after all the criticism he gave to then-candidate Trump, and then they met about the Secretary of State job. Based on where the country's at now, would we all benefit from people who actually don't agree with President Trump sort of getting in there to try to do the job?
This is a slightly different question than those whose government service preceded the current president, and in all likelihood whose government service will continue after he's left office. But the question of appointees, that is the team that a new president, or for that matter a governor or mayor, puts together to implement his or her agenda, is a really important one. And once again, you get to a question of expertise and loyalty, and the two are not mutually exclusive. But of course, the higher a threshold you set on the question of loyalty, the smaller the pool of potential experts you have to help you. That's not to suggest that reasonable people can disagree as to the expertise of Trump's early appointments, but there's no question by being so specific in his requirements for loyalty throughout the presidential campaign that it does mean that other people who might be willing and able to help won't be available to him.
So, Dan, going back to people who've been in the job or in a department for a long time, again, we don't know every person involved in these jobs, but would you imagine there's a lot of soul searching going on, thinking that, both from a practical and an emotional standpoint to determine the old phrase, wanting to serve your country, but just not really knowing how to do that at this point because things have been upended in an even more dramatic way than they would have, say, if a more conventional Republican were in the White House?
Well, that's precisely right. And, we've been talking about these dynamics as they normally occur when a chief executive is replaced by somebody with a different vision, as is the case on so many questions these days. I think those stakes are heightened when it comes to the nature of this new president and the new administration. So once again, I think the question you get to is, do you stay or do you go? If you are a dedicated public servant, do you believe that you can best fulfill that obligation while doing what you can to shape the goals of a new president and a new administration? Or do you come to the conclusion that that simply can't be done and you can no longer be a part of that government? Those types of internal conversations are almost certainly going on throughout the federal government right now.
How would you define political courage? And do you think it is different now than it would have been 20 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever?
I won't presume to answer the question, but it's a question I ask my students, both at UC Berkeley and at the University of Southern California. We talk a lot about leadership and we talk a lot about political courage. And what they generally come to, using different language in different semesters, but they generally almost always come back to the same core concept, which I think is a very wise one. They say that the definition of political courage, at least for an elected official, is a willingness to lose his or her job in order to do what's right. What the smart young people I get to work with generally come to is the idea that the office for the most courageous of political leaders shouldn't be more important than the overall goals.
Dan Schnur is a political scientist at USC and UC Berkeley and a former gubernatorial spokesman.